This podcast is sponsored by Merkle B2B. Curious to know how Merkle B2B can connect you with the right audience? It's not magic. It's the integration of data, technology, and creativity. Discover more at MerkleB2B.com.
This is your tech news briefing for Monday, January 24th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Since as far back as the 1950s, the idea of nanotechnology has been batted around as a development that'll fundamentally change our world. Think ultra-tiny cameras, minuscule devices that could detect illness, infinitesimal sensors to detect the slightest changes in the climate. The potential uses have seemed endless. So when will this amazing technology become a reality? As our tech columnist Christopher Mims points out, in many ways, it already has. On today's show, he'll join us to discuss where nanotech is currently being used, why there's been so little fanfare about it, and what the future could hold for it. That's after these headlines. Intel says it'll invest at least $20 billion in two new chip-making facilities just outside Columbus, Ohio. The new factories are part of an effort by Intel, supported by the White House, to increase U.S. chip capacity amid the global semiconductor shortage. At an event marking the announcement, Intel's CEO Pat Gelsinger addressed the impact of the chip shortage.
The demand for semiconductors is truly unprecedented today. And many industries, many factories, you know, auto manufacturers, you know, are stopped because of a $2 chip. You know, imagine that, a $30,000 car manufacturing line, you know, everybody has to go home for a $2 chip. You know, this is clearly unacceptable, and we have to control and manage our supply chains and every aspect.
For the U.S., there's also a national security concern as the country competes with China for an edge in the tech that'll be essential for future economic growth and security. Here's Ohio Governor Mike DeWine speaking at the same event.
Intel's announcement today is a signal to China and to the rest of the world that from now on, our essential manufactured products in this country will be made in the United States of America.
Construction on the new facilities is expected to start late this year, with production coming online in 2025. Intel said the project could create up to 3,000 permanent jobs. IBM is selling the analytics and data assets of its Watson Health business to the investment firm Francisco Partners. IBM had big aspirations for Watson Health, which uses artificial intelligence to analyze diagnostic tests and other health data to help manage care. But Watson's impact fell short of what IBM had hoped for, and the Wall Street Journal reported last year that the company was exploring a sale of the unit. This is IBM's latest step to streamline its operations and refocus its core business around cloud computing. And Google is asking a federal judge to dismiss the antitrust case brought against it by Texas and more than a dozen state attorneys general. The search giant argues the case was based on outdated conduct and failed to show its digital advertising practices were anti-competitive. The company also argues its products improved competition and benefited publishers and advertisers. The states say Google uses its position at nearly every level of the online ad industry to manipulate auctions so that Google could win more often. A Texas representative said the state plans to challenge the motion to dismiss. All right, coming up, a technological revolution decades in the making has been taking shape with little fanfare. Was it simply too small to see? We'll discuss after the break.
This podcast is sponsored by Merkle B2B. Curious to know how Merkle B2B can connect you with the right audience? It's not magic. It's the integration of data, technology, and creativity. Discover more at MerkleB2B.com.
For decades, computer scientists and physicists have predicted that, any minute now, nanotechnology was going to completely reshape our lives. If you haven't thought about nanotech for a while, you might recall that it generally refers to materials that can be manipulated at an atomic or molecular scale. The potential of creating sub-microscopic machines opens up huge possibilities, like ultra-small cameras that could be placed nearly anywhere, or tiny sensors that could detect air pollution. There are even predictions of nanomachines that could float through our bloodstreams to repair tissue damage. But while some of the more outlandish predictions are still a ways away from becoming reality, it turns out there are plenty of nanotechnologies that have already worked their way into our daily lives. Here to discuss what they are and what might come next in the field is our tech columnist, Christopher Mims. Christopher, thanks for coming back on the show.
Zoe, thanks for having me.
So Christopher, you've written a piece for the Journal where you say we are already using nanotechnology. What are some of the examples of where it exists in our daily lives?
So what we got, and I think this is why a lot of people have missed the fact that there's so much nanotechnology in our lives already, is we got top-down construction of nanotechnology versus what people thought we were going to get, which was bottom-up. So bottom-up nanotech is like you build things one atom at a time. Top-down is how we make microchips. So you take a giant ingot of silicon and you just keep slicing it thinner and thinner, and then you etch it in this photolithographic process, which is like the same way that you develop like a film photo from a negative. And you're basically just subtracting material until you're able to create features that are literally at the nanoscale, just, you know, a few tens or hundreds of atoms across. That's the size of the features in modern microchips. That same technology can be used to make tiny machines, and those are called MEMS. And there are just dozens or even hundreds of examples of MEMS in everybody's life. Your car is full of them. Your cell phone is full of them. We kind of couldn't live without them, but we're unaware that they're around us because I guess we can't see them. They're microscopic.
Okay, so let's talk through some of these MEMS a little bit. That stands for microelectromechanical systems. But how do some of these MEMS work?
So there are MEMS, which are literally tiny machines like wheels and stuff. There are MEMS which look like tiny combs, like you would use to comb your hair, and they're in your cell phone, and they're vibrating incredibly quickly. Some of them are vibrating, you know, between 1 and 5 billion times per second, and that's because they have to shake at the same speed of frequencies as radio signals, which they are trying to filter out or filter for, as the case may be. So the way that your phone works, the way all wireless communication works, whether it's Bluetooth or Wi-Fi or communicating with a cell tower, is that it's broadcasting and transmitting on certain frequencies. I mean, that's why 5G is a big deal, because we've added all these new frequencies that your phone can listen in and talk in. And, you know, it's just like when you're tuning a particular station on the radio dial. Sometimes, you know, if you're out in the boonies or whatever, you might get some interference from another radio station transmitting on the same frequency, or its signal is spilling over into the band you're trying to pick up. So there's a lot of noise out there. And for you to have a really robust high-speed connection and get these very fast speeds that 5G promises, all of that noise has to be filtered out. Otherwise, you're just going to be knocked down to a lower speed, or it won't work at all.
I wonder just how small some of these possible nanotechs can ever really get.
So we're already in a world where, you know, if you talk about these tiny MEMS, the microelectromechanical devices, they're on the order of, you know, individual features are like 1/100th the width of a human hair. And then you get into even smaller structures, these so-called meta lenses, which might someday replace the lens in your camera with a completely flat lens that have these nanoscale features on them that bend light. And those features are 1/1000th the width of a human hair. But you also have in the laboratory people getting down to the level of using so-called electron beams to manipulate individual atoms. And, you know, a lot of us have seen, you know, years ago, IBM spelled their logo out in atoms. But that was kind of a brute force approach. It's hard to reproduce. It doesn't yield very usable things. But what people are doing now is, you know, they'll take a sheet of graphene, which is just carbon, and that's only one atom thick, and they'll use these electron beams to just burn channels in them that are just a few tens of atoms across, or they'll move individual atoms onto the sheet of graphene, and they can build these 3D structures that way. And there's been lots of applications proposed for that. Like maybe you're going to have a quantum computer in your pocket someday, because the 3D structure to contain the elements of that computer will be made in this way. There's even proposals to build structures that are useful for microchips using biological elements like DNA. So you have DNA, you attach it to some carbon nanotubes, the DNA helps you line them all up in the right way, and then pretty soon you can make a transistor, and maybe someday you can make a microchip. Maybe you would grow a microchip instead of etching one.
You know, you mentioned all the nanotech that we have and all the possibilities that might come, but I wonder why there hasn't been a celebration of the way nanotech is being used now, or at least kind of a calling out of the fact that we have it.
Yeah, I wonder about this too. I feel like materials science is just gets neglected and it's the unsung hero of our modern world. I mean, I really personally enjoyed all those articles that were like, you know, here's how we got mRNA vaccines. Because frankly, if you want to talk about nanotechnology, an mRNA vaccine is a tiny biological robot that reprograms the code of your immune system. I mean, if that's not nanotechnology, I don't know what is. And as many of us know now, you know, COVID vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna are mRNA vaccines.
So what's next then for nanotech? I mean, what's on the sort of near-term horizon for the kind of developments we can expect?
So one really interesting application that's just coming to the fore are these things called meta lenses. So imagine all the lenses that normally have to get stacked up to make, you know, like a traditional film camera, or even, you know, the camera in your iPhone. You know, there's a bunch of glass or plastic lenses in there used to bend the light. Meta lenses are completely flat, they're ultra thin, and they use these nanoscale pillars. They look like a plush carpet or something under a microscope to bend light in ways that physicists frankly didn't even know were possible until maybe 10 or 15 years ago. So this could lead to all kinds of new optical sensors, everything from detecting black ice with your autonomous driving system to identifying skin cancer with your cell phone camera.
All right, so a lot of new tiny possibilities to look forward to. That's our tech columnist, Christopher Mims. Thanks so much for joining us, Christopher.
Thanks so much for having me, Zoe.
And that's it for today's tech news briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.